Together we stand, divided we fall. A little bit of cautionary potential prophecy from Roger Waters and Pink Floyd there, your theme song on The Conversation. That was Hey You. Welcome to the show. This is a live call-in show where we look to hear from the community about topics that affect us all. My name is Graham Nystrom, and I'm your host today. The number here, 503-325-0010, and today's topic is political polarization, as viewed through the lens of what was once referred to as MAD, or mutual assured destruction, and that was the understanding that we had the capability to completely destroy each other and ourselves if we didn't get along. And I fear that that's where we're headed with the polarization in our political environment today. I think that our democracy is under a significant threat. And I wonder if you do too. I wonder if there is something that we can do to prevent that from happening. Can we stand together, or will we continue to be divided and ultimately bring about our own demise? So I'd like to hear from you. Give us a call, 503-325-0010. I've got a few points to talk about of my own, but ultimately this show is all about you. So we look forward to your calls today. Just a real quick recap. Mutually assured destruction, or MAD, is a doctrine of military strategy and national security policy in which a full-scale use of nuclear weapons by two or more opposing sides would cause the complete annihilation of both the attacker and the defender. And so we do have our first caller. Hi there. You're on the air. What's your comment or question?
Hello, I'm on the air.
Yeah, you're on.
Okay, I'm concerned because historically we are at a place that Europe was in just about 80 years ago. We have a person in charge, would be the president, and rather than following the script that's been followed by presidents up to this point, by getting his people through Congress to be approved by Congress into positions of power, he's making all these guys temps, temporary this, temporary that, acting this, acting that. He's going around all the constitutional provisions that are supposed to prevent stuff like that. And if you look at history of Germany and Hitler's rise to power, he did exactly the same thing. And I find that troubling, and I don't understand. I mean, we're told that history repeats itself, but nobody seems to pay attention to the fact that, yes, history does repeat itself, and we're watching it day by day, and nothing is being done. And, you know, it's to the point now, and you're right about the division in the country. It's just, in Germany, one-third of the people didn't like it, one-third liked it, and the other third watched everybody killing each other, and that was it. So that is my comment, and I'll get off the air and get you guys back on so I can hear.
Okay, thanks for the call.
Thanks, Graham.
503-325-0010. So, with presidential power, we've got three branches of government: executive, legislative, and judicial. And their role is to provide balance, checks and balances. And so balance was kind of one of my big ideas for this topic today, because this world is full of polar opposites, north and south, up and down, hot and cold. And I learned a lot about yin and yang in Chinese philosophy, and yin and yang are considered complementary opposites, that without one you could not have the other, and that they create balance. And so I think that yin and yang is a good example that we can look to with Republicans and Democrats, is does that provide balance, or are we just slinging arrows at each other? So we do have our next caller. Hi, you're on the air. What's your comment or question?
I don't know if it's arrows or machine guns right now at each other.
Yeah, metaphorical, but, yeah.
What I have a concern of is that we had parents that had gone through the Depression and World War II and were very, very American, but very protective of not getting into more wars, because they figured out that it was pretty stupid. And we don't, you know, we have Vietnam, but Vietnam was a man-made administration, rich capitalist, Portuguese oil type stuff. And it wasn't a threat like World War II was. And I just have real concerns that our younger people that are like 50 and younger just don't understand what war is. And we had it drilled in our heads by parents. That's all I have to comment. I just think that we don't know what we're trying to be nationalistic about.
Well, maybe education becomes part of the conversation then, because if you don't know your history, then you are doomed to repeat it.
That's true. And with what's in the White House now, they don't want people to be educated.
Isn't that a shame?
Yeah. That's all I have.
Thanks for the call. This is The Conversation on Coast Community Radio, and we're talking about political divisiveness today and how we can find balance or move forward in a positive way in our democracy. So I was talking about yin and yang being complementary opposites, and that balance is achieved through the interaction of those opposites. And so I suppose in an ideal world, that would be what the Republican and Democratic parties do. But I don't see that happening. And my question is, how can we be good neighbors? How can we be fellow Americans, especially when we don't know what we're all thinking or what we're all hearing? And I think that I've heard several allusions to World War II. And I think one of the biggest lessons we can learn from World War II is how propaganda machines work. And so I think our sources of information become especially critical at a time like this. And also our sources of disinformation are especially powerful and critical right now. I did not listen to the State of the Union address on Tuesday, but I did. You're going to laugh. I watched a little bit of Fox News's report on it and what Sean Hannity had to say about it. And so, if it's okay, I want to share just a little bit of this with you so that you can know how... And I'm making the assumption that most of our listeners are probably politically progressive, but I know that we have a lot of Republican listeners as well. I honor you both, but I do think that this is very enlightening, because this is not what we hear on our station. It's very contradictory.
Every American should be proud of their country. We are now looking and observing a tale of two very different Americans. You always hear about choice elections. We're about to have one in 273 days. On one side, you have the Democratic Party, the do-nothing Democrats. They have offered nothing but 3 years of hate, rage, never-ending witch hunts, socialism, conspiracy theories, lies, slander, besmirchment, character assassination. Now, it's the party that wants to what? Nationalize everything, even supporting infanticide and abortion after birth, as the Virginia governor told us. On the other side, you saw the president tonight. He is pushing prosperity, freedom, security. And moments ago, he delivered the compelling, uplifting speech of his life, highlighting America's groundbreaking successes over the past 365 days, really the last 3 years.
Okay, so that's all we're going to roll of that. But you get the idea. That was a lot of adjectives describing Democrats in a very blanket way and describing the past 3 years of what that side of the aisle in federal government has done. Do you agree? Do you disagree? Do you think it's a problem that some people hear this and other people don't? What do you hear that raises your red flags about truth in reporting? And I just have to say, too, that Counterspin, before this program, that was a complete coincidence that they talked about the weaponization of space, which is one of the final chapters in that mutual assured destruction narrative. When Reagan wanted to start doing his Star Wars campaign, it's kind of a good thing that the Berlin Wall came down, because that was essentially violating what was a peaceful peace through mutual assured destruction. So the number, 503-325-0010. This is The Conversation. We've got three open lines, and the wonderful Pete is in the lobby taking your calls and patching them through to the air room. I'd like to hear from you. So we've been applying mutual assured destruction to our current political environment, and it seems to me that we're continually firing metaphorical nukes at each other politically. And to me, that's just destroying any hope of a functioning democracy. And after studying a little bit of Plato in college and reading Plato's Republic, he describes the different types of government, whether it's ruled by the rich or ruled by the strong, or in our case of a democracy, ruled by the people. According to Plato, that's the second worst form of government. And so I'll let you do a little exploration in that if that piques your interest. The only one worse, in his opinion, was tyranny. And so what do you think? Is democracy even salvageable at this point? It's hard to stay optimistic, but I try. We do have another call coming in, 503-325-0010, if you'd like to join the conversation. We'd love to hear from you. Hi there, you're on the air. What's your comment or question?
First of all, I want to tell you how much I enjoy your show.
Well, thank you.
Every Friday, I find it really, really interesting. Anyhow, we're talking about differences among people. I've heard a couple of comments, and you speak about it. And I've been reading this book called Astoria, Astoria and Jefferson's Lost Pacific Empire.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing, you know, this is soon after the American Revolution, from him and from England. And the thing that really has been striking about the book is that everybody's an immigrant. Everybody.
Right.
On some of these ships, a good quarter of the crew were Hawaiians. And this whole of North America, Canada, and America was really pretty much funded by the fur trade. But the thing that I wanted to point out is that these all were immigrants. Everybody had an accent, and a history that was not American, except for, of course, the Native Americans, who were also involved in this whole thing. There was two strikes out to settle the Pacific coast. One was by ship around the Horn, and the other one was overland, sort of following Lewis and Clark. But the number of, what would we call them now, foreigners? But these were all people working together. And
maybe even refugees at that point. You know, people wouldn't have left a happy, healthy, successful home life to travel around Cape Horn or overland to the Pacific Northwest if they didn't almost have to, I would assume.
Well, you know, it was really economic, and I heard someone talking about earlier about the Space Force. And in a sense, it was sort of similar. especially the economic aspects. But the thing I really wanted to mention was all these people came from different places, different backgrounds, different languages. Hawaiians, Native Americans, and Native Canadians. It was a real interesting beginning of the melting pot, and why we can't embrace us all together today is actually very disturbing to me.
I think one of the disturbing things to me is that what if most people actually do think that way, but somehow through media we're being led to believe that the world is a dark and scary place and that your neighbors are out to get you, you know, and that it's not a safe world.
I've had a similar thought, and that could be. But how do we stop this from happening? I really don't know. I really don't know how we can counter that except for doing nice things for each other, treating each other with respect and kindness, and helping each other. And maybe just in our own neighborhoods we could do that.
Yeah, I think one of the big hot points locally right now is the contrast between people who want to do good for the environment and people who want to protect their livelihood as working Oregonians in the timber industry.
Right.
And my question is, and so let's apply mutual assured destruction to this, why can't we have a win-win situation? Why can't we make decisions as a group that are good for the environment and good for working Oregonians? Why does that have to be mutually exclusive? Why does one side have to win and the other side have to lose? And that just comes back to that polarization piece that is essentially at the top of my mind. And, you know, as I think about it, might be the thread that connects every show that I do.
I kind of think I listen a lot, so I think you're right about that. But I do, I also agree those two things, economics and the environment, can weld together. It's just that no one has found the proper torch to do it.
Yeah, another interesting thing that I heard recently was about the nature of industries evolving and what industries can we look at that have had to evolve. And so with regards to the timber industry, this is an industry that would prefer not to have to evolve. But
right.
I think the writing is on the wall.
Yeah.
And so whether a cap and trade, you know, and I think that blaming a cap and trade bill on that need for an industry to evolve is a little misleading, in my opinion.
I think you have far better knowledge than I do. I was listening to Betty Johnson, who comes on every Monday morning, and she had some comments about the timber industry that I thought were interesting that maybe I hadn't really considered. But I sure love the station. I sure love your show. And I would really recommend that people pick up this book by Peter Stark, Astoria. It's amazing.
I have heard, and I will pick up that book. So let me ask you real quick, though. Do you remember any of her points about the timber industry?
Well, she was saying that I'm going to paraphrase, of course, but what I got from her comments is that they're struggling, too, and that they've had a lot of stuff laid on them that makes it very hard to stay in the industry. Or to, you know, be profitable in the industry. I have some questions about that. But I think Betsy Johnson, I think she's very knowledgeable and a great representative for the people of that part of Oregon. I'd like to know more about her opinion. Maybe that will come up again with her. But I think she has a little different angle on the wholeness of the thing.
Yeah.
Now, you know, anyhow, again, I'd really recommend people pick up this book by Peter Stark, Astoria. It's marvelous.
All right.
It really has helped me understand unite a lot of historical events that seem to be just sort of floating around in my mind.
Well, thanks for the call and the recommendation, and I hope that everyone listening will take your recommendation to heart and go find a copy of that book, perhaps at a local bookstore.
Thank you very, very much.
Thanks for the call. This is The Conversation on Coast Community Radio. 503-325-0010 is the number, and we've got our next caller. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, this is Seth.
Hi, Seth.
Hey, and first of all, a couple of comments. I'd like to second the recommendation of Peter Stark's Astoria. I thought it was a great book. Very interesting, lively, really interesting to hear about how our town came about and what it's all about. But the other thing I wanted to bring up was in relation to some of the stuff that you were talking about a little earlier about division and opposition and polarization. One of the things, I'm actually teaching a class on this up at the college right now, and one of the things that I try to mention to the college or to my students all the time is to say, you have to realize our nation, the framers of the Constitution, presumed that there was going to be acrimony between people all the time. They thought it was something that couldn't be overcome, and they structured our government generally and our society to have to actually confront that acrimony. But the difference was that there were remedies for that acrimony through debate, through compromise, through engagement, and through recognizing the common good and trying to find some kind of solidarity that came from that. And I think one of the things that we have lost in many ways, at least in our recent incarnation of it, is the ability to be able to find solidarity, to find ways to come together, to recognize things that even if we disagree about a whole host of other things that move us towards greater achievements, and to not give undue attention to things that divide us in many sorts of ways.
So we need to find some common interests.
Yeah, we do. And it was something, I mean, I say that not just because of sort of the obviousness of it, but also because that's really the structure of our government. That's what people like Madison explicitly had in mind when they said this. That about 50 years after the Constitution was put together, a young Frenchman named de Tocqueville, Alexis de Tocqueville, came to the United States and made all sorts of observations about the nature of democracy in America. He was fascinated by it because he wanted to understand, amongst other things, why it is that American democracy seemed to be able to survive in the experiment that it was when the experiments of democracy in France had collapsed into revolution and tyranny. And one of the things that he observed a few things that sort of promoted democracy in the United States, but one of them was clubs. He said he could not imagine a place where you had more people who came together to associate about all sorts of and any sort of different thing, you know, whether it was games or some sort of hobby or some sort of civic project or whatever. And he felt like that made it so that people got practice in doing democracy and finding common ground with things. I think one of the things that we can do and should do, and as a matter of fact, we're in a pretty good position to do in a place like Astoria, is find ways in which to associate with one another face-to-face as much as possible. I think when we do that, we don't just achieve little things, we repair some of the ruptures in the fabric of political society, and we can be much better for it.
And so you're not talking about Facebook, right?
I am not talking about Facebook. Yeah, I'm talking about getting together in public spaces and meeting people and dealing with things that make it possible to do that. I mean, as much as people might want to criticize professional sports, for instance, I'll tell you one thing about it. It is something that allows people from all over the gamut to come together and find ways in which to find common ground. And when they do that, they put themselves in a position to find common ground on more politically and socially, shall we say, substantial issues.
Well, that's interesting. Can I challenge you a little bit on that?
Absolutely not. No.
Come on.
Go ahead.
So with sports, because I consider that to be part of the problem, because I think in the way that you're talking about practicing, engagement in healthy argument or whatever, to me, sport, you know, professional sports is practicing in that us versus them mentality where someone always has to win and someone always has to lose. And it's devastating to win or devastating to lose. And it's,
Sure. Well, here's what my response to that would be. I absolutely agree that that can be the case. And when you see professional athletes acting deplorably in terms of victory and defeat, it's pretty disappointing. But I would also say that, first of all, one thing sports allows people to do, and I'm not saying sports is the answer, it's just one little example of many different things that are here, but is that it brings people, like I was saying, it brings people together who would see things disparately. And the other thing is it has the opportunity for this is kind of a quaint way of putting it, but for virtuous behavior. You can be have good sportsmanship, you know, gracious in victory and accepting in defeat. You can look towards better things. There are opportunities to do it. I would say that the other thing that comes along with this, and it's one of the reasons why de Tocqueville, not to get too professory about it, but the reason why de Tocqueville brought this up, as he said that, about clubs, was that there was always a way in which you were looking forward to building something bigger and better and more noble in some ways. And this I think, is something that we could do. So it's professional sports in and of itself as sort of a paradigm of capitalist consumption and atavism. Yeah, that's not a great thing. But if you temper that with the better parts of ourselves and with moral decency and with the things that we would like to appeal to, I mean, essentially, if there is a concerted and communal effort to appeal to the high road, I think it helps a lot. It's not an accident that quite often most of this acrimony, a lot of these divisions between us, is something that is pushed by people who want to make rifts between us. And I think when we do things not to take a bait on that and actually to rise above it in our everyday things, like talking about sports, going to our clubs, going to our churches, doing the social communal things that we do, I think we do a lot to really begin to address the problem. It doesn't solve it by any means, but it is definitely our shot of vitamin D for the body politic.
Nice. I really appreciate de Tocqueville's takeaway there, that this is all about, hey, let's just see what we can do. Let's see what we can achieve.
And
I think,
experiment.
I think that as a country, as a city, you know, environmentally, wouldn't that be nice? You know, the timber industry needs to evolve. Let's see what we can do to fix this and make it better. Rather than just immediately picking up the, the nuclear weapons.
Yeah. And actually doing nothing from that, because all we do is get angry and worked up and do things that are destructive with this. And with that, I have to go, because as a matter of fact, I have to go teach a class. But it was good to talk. And thank you for having this conversation, Grant. I really appreciate it a lot.
We are honored by your phone call. Thank you, Seth.
All right. See you later. Bye-bye.
Seth Titchener is a professor of philosophy at the Clatsop Community College, and I encourage you to take one of his classes or attend one of his lectures and conversations that he does around town with his different groups. He's doing fantastic work. Thank you, Seth, for your contribution to the community. Well, I think with that, we are going to wrap up the show. This has been The Conversation on Coast Community Radio, KMUN Astoria 91.9 FM, KTCB Tillamook 89.5 FM, streaming at coastradio.org, and on your mobile device using the TuneIn app. Thanks for listening. Thanks to everyone who called, and I hope to hear from you in a future week. Come Together by the Beatles. Stay tuned. Coming up in just a few minutes is Friday Folk with your host, Albert Smith. We'll hear some headline news from NPR first. Thanks, as always, for listening to Coast Community Radio. Thanks to our members. Thanks to our volunteers. And have a fantastic Friday and a great weekend.